Blog Talk Radio.
As it operates at the highest level in the United States today, rests upon two solid foundations and enjoys the protection of shelter. If we could knock out its foundations, it would collapse, and if we could strip away its shelter, it would wither and die. The shelter is secrecy. The foundations are big government and manipulation of money. No conspiracy can stand the light of exposure. No conspiracy can rule the masses without the tool of an extensive government bureaucracy. And certainly no capitalist conspiracy can long survive without control over the nation's money. Expose the conspiracy. Reduce the size of government. Return our money to a standard that cannot be manipulated. This must be our response. In the limited time available, we have attempted to demonstrate that the conspiratorial view of history, particularly of recent history, is the correct view. Let us summarize now seven major conclusions. 1. There is and has been for some time a conspiracy among some of the richest people in the world, a conspiracy that virtually owns the money systems of the major non-communist nations. This monopoly is protected by the power of the respective governments and is used to perpetuate the conspiracy's vast wealth by the creation of money out of nothing. 2. In the United States, this monetary fraud is perpetuated through the Federal Reserve System. Although the executive branch theoretically has some control over this system through occasional appointments, in reality, it is the system and those behind it who control the executive branch. 3. The capitalist conspiracy in this country surfaces to public view in the form of the semi-secret Council on Foreign Relations. Its members exercise their control over the nation through government, tax-exempt foundations, centers of education, and the mass communications media. 4. On the surface, the capitalist conspiracy appears to oppose communism. It spends billions of dollars in spectacular military displays of anti-communism all around the world, but never to the extent of seriously harming the enemy, and certainly not to the extent of defeating him. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, the conspiracy always has nourished and aided communism, both at home and abroad. It does this not because it is pro-communist, but because it needs the appearance of a formidable foe and the chaos byproduct of a managed conflict to advance its own goal of totalitarian world government. 5. There is much evidence indicating that the capitalist and communist conspiracies both are directed by a single master conspiracy which may have continuity with the Order of the Illuminati, which was founded 200 years ago. But this historical question is not nearly as important as the immediate question of what can be done about it today. 6. As for our response, we must begin to dismantle the conspiracy's machine of big government. We must restore American independence. We must return our schools to local control. We must protect our police forces from federal aid, which is the certain path to a national police force controlled from Washington. We must denounce revenue sharing as a transparent device leading to control over local government. We must raise up men for political office who not only talk about reducing government, but who will do it once they're elected. And that means men who are totally independent of establishment politics. 7. We must reduce the Federal Reserve System to a service function of clearing checks between banks only, merely turning the system as it stands over to the federal government, as some have suggested, will not solve the problem. The same people would control it either way. The root of the evil is that money is created out of nothing, and the insiders could do that today just as easily directly through government as they do through the Federal Reserve System. The ultimate solution is to prevent anyone, in or out of government, from manipulating the money supply. And the only way to do that is to return our money to the gold and silver standards. 8. We must expose the conspiracy to public view. If somehow every American could be made aware of the facts contained in this presentation, if it were possible to circumvent the establishment's channels of mass communication and carry this message person to person to our friends and neighbors and fellow club members, the conspiracy would collapse like a house of cards. Yes, the hour is late, but it is not too late if we are realistic in our efforts. As Americans, we can still speak out without fear of imprisonment. We can still join together into patriotic groups to multiply our effectiveness. We can still challenge the establishment's candidates. We still retain that remnant of power to regain control of our own government. With divine guidance and with your help.
I want to start this show off by continuing down that path explained by that intro, and that is, take a good look at Greek financial crisis. America could soon face something very similar. Before the election, I believed in my own heart that I have seen America's future if Obama got reelected, and that premonition was Greece. I've often made reference that California would be the second Greece no matter what. By this Greece comparison, I don't mean that the Midwest will soon be covered with ancient ruins or that Texas will swap hamburgers for feta cheese. I mean that the ongoing Greek financial crisis is the same kind of crisis the United States more than likely will face a few years from now if we continue to make the same kinds of mistakes the Greeks have made over the last decade, laying aside the brain cells required to understand the intro to this show and who controls the money. I mean simply that Greece is bankrupt. More to the point, Greece has borne all of these burdens for a long, long time. Yet nothing has been done because the country's deeply partisan political system is totally paralyzed. And whether they go under or not does not make the people like George Soros any money. Try to carry out any Social Security reform in Greece, such as raise the pension age or to stop early retirement. Just watch what happens. Mass rioting is followed, such as with the passage of the pension reform bill back in 2008, and the government became so unpopular it lost the next election. No one cares who the next Peter is to rob so that they can pay the collective Pauls over there. The political class is aware of the country's economic problems, but it denies them to keep their jobs. The European Commission issued a report accusing Greece's finance ministry and statistical services of severe irregularities stemming from the submission of incorrect data. In Eurospeak terms, that means the commissioners think the Greeks have been lying. That's right. Can you imagine? Lying. They maintain that the 12.7% budget deficit was originally forecast to be 3.7%. And plenty of other figures coming out of Greece seem to have been way off. No way, right? Mm-hmm. Now, no country makes accounting errors like that by accident. Just ask King Obama and his gang of thugs. But in a different sense, Greece's weakness are also shared by the United States. Though we do not have precisely the same problems, we do have similar level of political paralysis and a similar level of partisanship. It is not possible to reform the U.S. Social Security program. President Bush tried half-heartedly and gave up before he started. It may not be possible to reform health care, even though Obama is now president again. President Obama, despite throwing the expensive sweeteners into the pile, may well fail. As they say, the numbers do not add up. The influence of lobbyists cannot be reduced. American legislators have been rented and will continue to be the power of the special interest groups to influence legislation cannot be tamed. We might not have farmers squatting on state land as in Greece, but we do have farmers dependent on huge distorting agricultural subsidies that do not improve agricultural production and apparently cannot be reduced because no one is willing to touch that issue. Fortunately for American politicians, we do not have to submit our financial statistics to a European Commission, and thus we do not have to lie about them outright. We simply cover them up. But aside from our very large budget deficit at the moment, 9.9% of GDP and climbing, we also have liabilities that are rarely acknowledged and never brought to the average American's attention. The costs of Medicare and Medicaid are going up, as is the cost of veterans' care. Markets assume that the vast debts of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are underwritten by the government, and someday the government might be called upon to pay them. No one is lying about these things. But no one is talking about them very much either, because where would the government get the money? It does not hold a job to make money. It prints money. The good news is that American government's bankruptcy is not on the front pages, because the front pages are owned by the special interest. That does not mean that it is not deadly serious. It just means that the guys behind the scenes who make the money on economics collapsing, who rule the White House, have a big smile on their face. Can anyone say George Soros? And it won't happen for a few years out, so they have to wait for the destruction of America to be completed as planned. Our sheer size, our entrepreneurship, and our relatively open business culture will keep us going for a little while. But the Greek crisis shows the combination of debt and political deadlock can be deadly. So, my brother Spence, come in and give me some pointers here.
Oh, good grief, David. First of all, everything you just said is obviously right on the money. I think, a bit feeling like kvetching. Good Yiddish word, you know. Before we came on the air, I had been watching the news, and it fascinated me seeing the people on Staten Island who received word from FEMA that they were closing their offices because of bad weather. Now, I find it pretty incredible that the people whose job is to be there to help those who are in terribly bad weather close the office because they don't want to get their booties wet. It also disturbed me seeing all of these people who have no way of communicating. Their cell phones don't work. They can't get on the internet. And FEMA had just put out an order to them, or a directive, that they can get information they need by logging on to the internet, when, of course, they can't log on. It's disappointing to me that this fellow was reelected when he abandoned our people in Benghazi. He was absent without leave, went to Las Vegas, abandoned the people on Staten Island and in New York right after his photo op with Governor Christie, and yet he's been reelected. I just am having a really difficult time with that. What also surprised me were statistics that I saw yesterday put up that showed that 59% of the population that is not black or colored, Mexican, Hispanic, voted against him, while only a smaller, much smaller percentage of the Hispanic population voted for him, and the colored population, the black population. But what interests me about that is the amount of work that had to be put in just appealing to and pandering to the Hispanic community while ignoring the issues that are driving the problems for all Americans, regardless of their color. This is something that I find extremely disturbing. I'd like to hear what others have to say at this point, because there are just so many things going through my mind that make me wonder how in the world this fellow was reelected.
Absolutely.
I'm truly surprised.
And we're going to move on there to our wonderful contributor, Beverly.
Well, hello, David. How are you?
Very good. And you?
I'm good. I think that this election was such a surprise to everyone. I know it was wrong. It turned out completely differently than what I had envisioned. And, you know, if you listen to Fox News much, you know that Morris and Rove were extremely wrong, too. The electorate just isn't what we thought it was. It's completely changed. And we've lost a lot of voters. And the question moving forward for me is, how do we get them back? You know, women should be natural GOP voters, as should the Latinos. And we are losing them by wide margins. You know, some of our Republican candidates didn't help too much on that when they're talking about abortion issues and contend that rape is different than what it is and should be handled different than what we actually all believe it should be. Anyway, we hear that the GOP should maybe move to the center, but I don't really believe that. I think we just need to make our case, and we don't do it well. I think that, you know, we've got to get those demographics to listen to us, and we've got to not pander to them, but to reason with them, because I think they're reasonable people. They just hear one side of the story, and we wait till, you know, time for the election to tell them the opposite side of the story when they have been inundated for ever since the last election on why they need to stay with the Democrat Party. It was surprising to me that the Latinos and the women broke against what we thought they would do. There were not as many white men, I understand, that showed up to vote, which was really surprising to me. We have so many very intelligent and prosperous white people that I thought would really understand that. In of all colors, but that really surprised me to hear the stats on that.
Exactly.
That would understand the importance of showing up to vote, and but really the crux of it is that those voters didn't show up because they've been bribed by Congress by public money. That's mine and yours. It was those voters who owe their idleness and their bloated incomes and their lifestyles to the public sector unions and the food stamps and the welfare. And over the past decade, we've simply let those numbers and individuals grow and grow and grow, and they've just encompassed the state. And bottom line, there's just too many voters that have been bought and paid for, and I think Mitt Romney said it like it is.
Exactly.
When he said there's no need to go after them, they're bought and paid for, is what he was saying, and it's true. And sadly, conservatives in the Senate, House, and White House have allowed the big government and the big spending and that kind of culture to flourish in this country for decades, three at least. And we've allowed those welfare rolls to expand, and of course our present leader certainly helped with that. George Bush didn't curb that either, and we've allowed the Social Security and entitlements to just be bludgeons, you know, and we allow those public sector unions to grow just to be so powerful.
Yep.
And we've got to take hold and see what we can do. I don't know what the answers are, but we must find them, and we need to start tomorrow, in my opinion, and find ways to communicate with all the demographics in this country so that they are informed about our country, our history, the price that was paid by our wonderful patriots for
Absolutely.
Our freedoms.
And I certainly agree, and we are going to start that by having discussions with wonderful people like are on this radio program and continuing every Thursday. Morris, come in and give me your opinion.
How are you today, David?
Very good.
Over the last year, the approval rate for the president has been below 50%. The approval rate for Congress was at 15%. So what did the people do? They reelect them all. We're in the same mess we were in 1 week ago. How could this happen? I was looking at a county map of the country with its red and blue splotches and remembered a letter from Thomas Jefferson to John Jay in 1785 dealing with American trade and whether we should have the trade or let other countries carry our production. Jefferson's reply deals with what I think we are dealing with today between the red and the blue splotches. He says, "We have now lands enough to employ an infinite number of people in their cultivation. Cultivators of the earth are the most valuable citizens. They are the most vigorous, the most independent, the most virtuous. They are tied to their country and wedded to its liberty and interest by the most lasting bonds. But our citizens will find employment in this line till their numbers and, of course, their productions become too great for the demand, both internal and foreign. As soon as it is, the surplus of hands must be turned to something else. I should then perhaps wish to turn them to the sea in preference to manufactures, because comparing the characters of the two classes, I find the former most valuable citizens. I consider the class of artificers as the panders of vice and the instruments by which the liberties of a country are generally overturned. If you look at the map, the red counties are agrarian, the blue counties are urban. The blue county political and union machines are panders of vice, and their constituents are on the payroll at our expense, which makes our job that much more difficult. If he wins fewer states and he's got 50.8% of the electorate, that's certainly more than just relying on minorities. It's urban centers are the birthplace of political machines. They're the birthplace of unionism. And when we know now that we have a majority that are living in that situation. If you look at the South, the old Confederacy is all red. But if you look at it from the county standpoint, every state capital is blue. So that's our education process that's got to happen. It's going to be very difficult over the next 4 years.
I absolutely agree, and I cannot stress enough how we have to get to work, and we're getting to work today. I mean, this radio program may seem small to some, but I want to be wide open with the fact that we have some very intelligent people contributing here. And Jesse, I want to bring you in on that note.
Oh, I like that. I'll take that. Yes, you know, Morris, with his background and founding principles and the history, and I know he's very passionate about it. And you know, that history, our history in this country is really just not that old. You know, what, 230 years in comparison to so many other nations around the globe that have thousands of years? We're still pretty young, and we're certainly too young to fail. Now so I like that Morris brings up, you know, voices from the past, voices of our founding fathers. They predicted that it was likely that a nation of the free would come to this point, And I think one of the sayings that we've heard often is Benjamin Franklin, upon leaving the Constitutional Convention and asked, you know, "So, Mr. Franklin, what sort of government have you given us?" And he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." And this is where I think that we are today. It is going to require a lot of education. On the election, the divide is so clear. I mean, we can point our fingers to Congress and say, you know, oh, gridlock, and the Washington's divided, and we can point our fingers there. But I think that the election is very evident that the country itself is divided in so many ways. And in fact, yesterday I saw something, and I did a little research, and I found out it was true that, you know, the difference between Romney and Obama, the votes are almost exactly divided. Obama's in there on a hair. First of all, we had a lot of independents, and we had Gary Johnson. He got over 1 million votes. But if you add up all the independent and the libertarian votes and the American Party, Romney, if those votes had gone for Romney, Romney would be the president today. And the difference is by so few votes. It's amazing. But I'm not saying, you know, I'm not pointing the finger at everybody. I'm just saying that's evidence of how divided our nation is. And I think that, you know, outside of all conspiracy theories, we, the people, have abandoned our role in government. You know, I must be tiresome. Everybody hears me say this all the time. But I believe it to be true that in the absence of we the people, during the time between elections, we've given all of our power over to these elected officials. Many of them are very good. But without our backing, you know, they're alone in this, you know, very divisive and stressful situation. You know, and there's lobbyists, a lot of people competing for their attention, special interests. We the people need to show up. And that's what I've been working on, and starting last night, we started moving forward and engaging we the people, that this is actually the more important time to show up. Showing up to vote is important, but showing up during the time between elections is more important. That's what can make the difference following this election.
Let's
because normally we don't show up between elections.
There are times when there are situations where showing up has one thing in common, and I might bring out the black community. There is one thing that they were all going to do. It made no difference about the past non-existent record of the person that was elected. Now, I firmly believe that, and I want to bring in next to give his opinion would be Ron. Ron, are you there?
I am. And it's been fascinating to listen to everybody this morning. Me too would be a little bit too trite. But a couple of things. One is the fact that the education system in this country is so abysmally a left, it's ridiculous. We don't educate our young people to become critical thinkers anymore. They're just merely taught to make it through to the next grade so that the teachers can keep their jobs.
Exactly.
And it's pathetic. And until we do something with our education system, and the first thing that would need to happen is get rid of the NEA, which I'm not quite sure how to do that, but you know, if we had the right leader in the White House, of course, they could just fire all the teachers of the members of the NRA, similar to what Reagan did with the air traffic control. But having said that, the other thing that has become more and more apparent to me over the years is if we want to point our fingers at anyone as far as what happened on Tuesday night, I think we need to look at the fact that when you point, like my dear old dad used to say, when you point a finger at anybody, you have to remember that three times as many are pointing back at you. And this is along the lines of what Jesse just said. The Republican Party is an absolute shambles. It's been going that way ever since Ronald Reagan, to be honest, quite frankly. Reagan provided the catalyst to bring the party to what really it was capable of doing. Now, did Ronald Reagan make every decision correctly? No, but no president does. But he made more correct decisions than incorrect. And he did one thing that no president since has done, and that is he renewed the American spirit. And when you lose your way, you've lost your spirit. And that's kind of way where it is now. But the Republican Party needs to, as Jesse was saying, maybe it's Beverly, need to identify the demographic, not just in terms of color of skin, but in terms of the people that don't, no longer vote Republican, and the new voters that can vote Republican but choose not to because they believe the diatribe coming from the other side.
Absolutely.
And the educational system the educating of these people needs to start right now. And will we be able to make the difference between now and 2016? I don't know.
Right.
But
I've got to give a kudos to everything you had to say, but there is always that one effective piece of conversation that jumps back in. Why would 90%+ of people who are black just simply vote for the person because he was black? Now, that's always going to be there. We can play like it's not there, but it's always going to be there. And on that note, I want to bring in Al. Al, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. There's a lot of ground to be covered in this call already. It probably could go on for another 10 hours or 10 weeks, this conversation. But I think one of the things that we have to come to realize is that within the parties themselves, the Democrat, Republican parties, that we've lost all kinds of people simply because there's no competition. And the Democrats and the Republicans will not give up this two-party system so you can have other people vote. For example, I'm in Maryland at the moment, and when I went to vote, I thought I was going in to vote for the President of the United States. What I realized that evening, and I just turned the TV off and couldn't be watching it anymore, was that my vote was not counted. And why is that? Electoral College makes it impossible for my vote to actually be counted. If I'm not Democrat in the state of Maryland, the Electoral College votes, and even if it was plurality, or close to plurality, my vote isn't counted. So if it's 49% of the people voting for Republican, 51% voting the other way, well, gee, my vote is not counted. So we need more competition, and that would make things better. I mean, when we had this big three automobile manufacturers, our cars became junk, literally junk. What happens when the foreign competitors came in? Our cars started to improve and to get better and better and better and better. I think we need the same kind of thing happening in our political party. I think the two-party system is outmoded, outdated.
Free enterprise and government, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have the Ron Paul conversations, you don't have the Gary Johnson conversations with any credibility. But if you had parties that actually voted directly for the President of the United States, you could form a government like a parliamentary system. I think that our system of government, the way it's set up right now, simply will not work. It's outmoded, it's outdated, and I think we really need to rethink about how we put people into our Congress, into our Senate, et cetera, and how we vote for the President of the United States.
That's an absolutely great point, and on that great point, I want to bring back in Brother Spence. Give me a point or two here.
I'd be delighted listening. You know, it really has been helpful just being quiet and hearing what everybody has to say. Some things came up that have just been discussed that I think really hit to the heart of a lot of this. One of the things that I've noticed over the last few years, and I noticed it most especially during this really horrible campaign season, is that the two extremes, the extremes in the Republican Party, the extremes in the Democratic Party, seem to be the ones who are in control at this point. I'm concerned about how, taking that into consideration, how, along with comments that have been made about the Electoral College that Al just made, it just hit so hard to me at the heart of a lot of this, the thought that we could have a president elected by Electoral College votes when the public doesn't really want that person makes no sense to me at all. First of all, I think that we have really probably reached the point where we need to start concentrating on working toward having, most effectively, a third party, a party that will truly represent the people. It was interesting when, and I don't remember which station it was now, I think probably Fox, I don't seem to get a whole lot of straight news anywhere else, that the independents played a huge role in the votes this time. I mean, there are an awful lot of independent groups that are voting or people who are considered to be independent. And yet they aren't given the time of day, really, when you think about it, by either party, not the way that they should have been. Another thing is the Electoral College. It's outdated, it's outmoded, it has no value really at all. I think that as Al just said, to cast a vote, knowing that your vote may be meaningless because the Electoral College will determine it. Well, gee, if that's the case, why does anybody in the states that have few electoral votes bother to vote? I mean, it's difficult to really put into words what I'm feeling at this point, and that's that we are not being given a voice as the public, as the electorate.
Exactly.
Our voice has been taken from us.
And, you know, there's also that female vote that has somehow escaped reality here, and I'm bringing in Beverly right now in hopes that she can address some of that.
Well, I don't know exactly what the situation was with all these younger women, but I think it starts back in the way that they are taught in school. I think our morals and principles of right and wrong are no longer taught in school. And so I think there was a great push by the Democratic Party to try to convince all the younger women that Roe versus Wade would be overturned and all their women's rights were going to go away. And, of course, marriage is not valued in that younger generation as per data. So I say that was it, just a simple fear tactic was used for them to encourage them not to vote Republican. But there was, changing the subject a bit, there was a little quote that I ran across the other day, which I thought was very poignant. It said, "Once we roared like lions for liberty, now we bleat like sheep for security. The solution for America's problems is not in terms of big government, but it is in big men over whom nobody stands in control but God." And that was Norman Vincent Peale. I thought that was very, very, very poignant. And, you know, we have fought a long, hard battle, but it's time for us to do the real work. We have common goals, and we can find a way to fight for our country and Constitution each day until the next election, so that the original idea that is America will live again. The real battle is not even close to being over. The real battle is not so much an economic battle in reality. It's a battle for the soul of our country.
You're right.
And on the business front, I'm sure many of you have had your economic trials and tribulations, and yet you're still fighting for the good fight instead of finding ways to live off the government. You know, we could all sit down tomorrow and we'd probably be good for a while until the money runs out. But, you know, you understand that hard work and perseverance pay off, and it doesn't matter the obstacles that a government may place before you and me.
Mm-hmm.
There's
correct.
Always a legal way to redirect your business endeavors or to succeed. If you have that will, that drive, that need to find the American dream, our kids don't know what that is. They haven't been
absolutely.
Taught what that is. And then in the end, they're going to still be the losers because nothing in life is free.
Absolutely, and I'm going to say amen to that because that is so very important, the thought process. Morris, come in here and give me a 2 cents worth from you.
There's so many good points being made. I don't know where to start. I think one thing that we have to do is break the two-party system. Now, everybody has kind of hinted around at saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting more candidates like it was 150 years ago. And coming up with a way to break the two-party system. They have such control over especially unions and the spoil system, which they say doesn't exist, but it does. You know, if you look at Congress especially, that's how I've always thought Congress is the problem. There's, you know, the 10 or 15% on the left and the 10 or 15% on the right that drag everything down. They're very divisive. You've got that 60 to 70% in the middle that can usually find common ground. Why can't we put together, you find some leader in Congress that won't get his Republicans together to vote and create a leader, but get the whole Congress together like it used to be, and you vote for your leader then. When you've got 435 people in the House voting for a leader, and then you can put the middle 70% can elect anybody they want, and they can make things happen. And it's, you know, to hell with the 15% on each side. You could do the same thing in the Senate. It'd be harder if we had the Senate elected by the legislatures like they should be, but in today's world, you know, the Harry Reids on the left and the far right people on the right, you could say to hell with them too, and you get your middle 65 votes and do what you want to do. Do things right and forget who's Republican, who's Democrat, who's independent. That's the way it was meant to be 230 years ago. That was what George Washington said in his farewell address. Don't go to parties. You're making a big mistake.
You know, the greatest thing you just got through saying was talking about Harry Reid. You remember he is also capable of not bringing something to the floor. So when he gets something from the House, he is capable of stopping it before it does get to somebody who has brain cells.
Yes, he is. And we've got to find that leader in Congress. I don't think Pelosi's it, and John Boehner's not it. You know, Paul Ryan would have been great, but, you know, we needed him on the ticket, I think. Senators, I don't have any clue on who is that person that could step up, who the Paul Ryan of the Senate is. But
I understand.
Anybody out there understands it, shoot it out there.
Right. The worst case scenario, of course, is our vice president being the top vote in the Senate that is also commandeered by Mr. Reid. And on that note, I would like to bring in Jesse. Are you there, Jess?
Yes, I'm here. And every time I hear that, I'm, you know, here in Nevada, right? And every time I hear the name Harry Reid, I wince. Oh, I just do. I'm so sorry. I feel like apologizing to the nation. We messed up during the 2010 elections by getting him back in. But there you go with the unions and the politics, right? But a silver lining here, one of the things I did want to put forward, I've had some conversation with some people in the know, and regarding this election, I mean, this is actually a very, while a painful time, it would be painful whether Romney was in or Obama was in. The cards are stacked right now. The economy, I mean, it's going to be worse, right, with Obama policies and with gridlock and with dearest Harry Reid saying that he is not going to work with the GOP. I mean, you know, talk about leadership there. But the next couple years are going to be really tough on the American people. They're going to be tougher with the Obama policies. The unemployment, the debt, the implementation of Obamacare, I mean, you know, the more people will see out in the open what is happening, I mean, now that the election is over, people can start to focus on their daily lives and what we can do here in this group and in related groups across the nation is make sure that people are starting to get educated. Because whoever is really, I mean, you can think of it one way. Whoever is at the top during the next couple of years, they actually are going to be the ones that get the blame. If Romney had gotten in, he would probably get the blame for the next 2 years.
You mean to tell me it's not going to be Bush's fault?
No. Well, no, it can't be Bush's fault now, right? It's all on Obama now, right?
Yes, right.
But you get what I'm saying. The next 2 years are going to be tough. The American people that voted for Obama voted for their own reasons. And I think a lot of it was because they were uninformed. We've come so far away from knowledge of our Constitution. I stand firm with uniting America is not going to be uniting the two parties. That's going to be, we're going to see that really sort of divide our country further. Uniting is to get people on the foundation of America, which is our Constitution and those great American values that gave birth to our country so eloquently expressed in the Declaration of Independence. If a lot of the Obama voters, if they knew that their freedom, you know, to speak, to assemble, to maybe have a gun, to buy a house, you know, that those kind of things are on the table right now, that, and I could go on, but if they actually understood that, the problem is that over the past decades, people have been taught that the Declaration and the Constitution are of historical relevance. And, you know, you see this kind of shift of power where everybody looks to, okay, well, it's Washington that protects our rights. It's Washington that gives us our free speech. That is not true. What is true, that the Bill of Rights, which is still taught in schools, it is not about what the government grants us. It is about what the government cannot do. We have lost in that pivotal point there. And this is where I think over the next couple of years, as we have to endure a lot of suffering and sacrifice and pain, a lot more with the leadership we have. But my hope is that through this, people will start to realize that the solutions are with we the people. We have the Our Community, Our Country thing starting up, and that's about empowering communities. And the more focus that communities can take on themselves, get informed, get engaged in governments, the less power we give presidents. And I think that too many people just give too much power to one person when actually the power is supposed to be with us, with we the people.
We the people, and with that, we the people, I want to bring back Ron. Give me your view.
Yeah, once again, all the points are incredibly right on. I think I've got to go back to something I said earlier, and that is that we do not educate people in this country to be critical thinkers. In other words, to look at something for what really is going on, not what just appears to go on. Brit Hume on Fox News the other night said that some exit polls were done, and 41% of those polled said that they made up their mind within the past week who they were going to vote for, and they were going to vote for Obama. Why? Because of the way he handled Hurricane Sandy.
Isn't that pathetic?
Now, think about that. I mean, it's almost makes you want to throw up.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that the perception, of course, perceptions unfortunately rule in politics and have for probably 230 years. But I think at this point in our history, it's just absolutely, it baffles me how 50% or more of the population can be so easily led.
Yeah, and it's called, you know, the lack of education, which most everyone here has pointed to, and rightfully so. And I want to bring in Al on that comment. Come in, Al.
Yes. Hi. As I'm listening, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we're talking about the Constitution. We replaced the Constitution in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. We gave up our sovereignty. I think that, you know, the travails that we are suffering right now, we keep putting the power back into the hands of people who don't care about us at all. It's a small group of bankers. They don't need to have the money. They just need to have the control and the power to rule our lives. We fight in Congress all the time. We give back power to bankers who cause this financial meltdown that we've got right now. I think we need to narrowly focus on a number of issues. You know, why is the federal government more important to the nation than the states and the individual? That's the first thing. Why do we have a Federal Reserve Bank? Why do we allow politicians to rule our lives? Why is 25 square miles more important than the rest of the nation? And if we start there, then we can narrow it down to the more specific things that I think we need to do. You know, and I think the most specific things we need to do is as we've been spoken about here, is to educate our children. But educate our children just how? What are we going to teach our children? And how do we teach critical thinking? Critical thinking, as near as I can determine, went out the window 50 years ago, maybe longer. You know,
it's not going to be taught by the teachers that we have today. Okay, the teaching unions have got to be dismantled. You've got to be awarded for success and penalized for failure, and that's the way you get good teachers.
Well, I could say this much. As a child, I was living in and around New York City, and Albert Shanker was raising hell in the city of New York with the teachers union. Well, it turns out in New York and every other state, it's illegal to have a teachers union. How come? How come the laws are not being enforced?
Exactly. It's a conflict of interest.
It definitely is a conflict of interest. So, I mean, I wish we had a lot more time to talk about this. Maybe what we should do is send questions in prior to these conversations and go through them and perhaps enlarge the scope of the conversation to many more people, possibly. From around the country to get different viewpoints on how this is all going to come together. That's really all I have to say. I appreciate
Excellent.
The time. Thank
yeah.
you.
And thank you. I cannot imagine everything and everybody hinging back on that same little function. Of course, it was education, but unfortunately, it's not going to happen overnight. And the very modest thing, if you will, is going to be the floodgates are going to open midterm when the re-elections for Congress are there. Trust me, we are going to be in a sinking ship, and those folks who voted now are going to be realizing that. Come in, Vince. Spence, excuse me.
David, you made excellent comments just now. So did Al. You all are. It's interesting. While we're talking, there's a chat going on in our chat box. And we've had several people log in today, clearly who don't really know what they're talking about. One of them, who just recently logged in, named Random, has been arguing and with a gal who's in there called Catgirl. Catgirl's very good, and she's pointed out that Random is not only bitching because he's not getting, or she's not getting, whatever kind of freebies that they're looking for, but what really stood out in reading all this is that Random is uneducated. For example, saying things like, those of us talking, we don't got nobody to blame but ourselves. It disturbs me to no end that the National Education Association, the NEA, continues to protect educators, teachers, who aren't capable of teaching. They put in their time, they punch their clock, they get their money, they get incredible benefits, and they don't have to produce a product the way that the rest of society does. It's disturbing. I think that we do have to abolish the NEA. I don't know that we can abolish the NEA, but certainly the Department of Education. We need to do things to get the public educated. We need to have students that come out of our schools that aren't placing number 26th in global rankings against all the other countries. That's appalling. What you just said, David, about the midterm elections, I couldn't agree with more strongly. You're right. Now, at least one thing we know, since Obama's a lame duck, what's going to happen at the midterms, I hope, and I think you're correct on this, is that the public will see exactly what isn't taking place. Because now there's nothing to do except concentrate on what's happening to get this country out of the problems we're in. And when they see that nothing's taking place and that the usual dodge and weave and other problems that we're seeing are not being addressed, there is every likelihood that both the House is already Republican-controlled. I fully expect to see, well, I don't know who's coming up in the midterms on the Senate side, but I would pray that a lot of people are and that we get some serious replacements going on.
I hope that Jesse takes it upon herself to make certain that Harry Reid is out of there. And, of course, she is standing by in the wings, and I wanted to make certain that I got that in. That's a hurl toward you, Jesse, and you're live with us, and we're running down the wire. So what are you going to do to get the commander-in-chief of the Senate out of the office?
Well, I believe in humanity. I believe in educated people. I believe in the good hearts of Americans. We are a most generous nation. A part of our nation, of course, has become seduced into this kind of socialistic thing. But I am, one thing that the election did show is that at least half of us are for our country. And I think that there were a lot of Blue Dog Democrats in that list, too, that did not vote for Obama. I know some of them personally. And with regards to Harry Reid, the big deal here is we get our ground game going and we get empower the people. And that's what we're trying to do. I invite everybody to go to ourcommunityourcountry.com or for short, OC2Network.com. This is a community empowerment project.
Absolutely. You've done a great job, all of you. I want to make certain that everybody here realizes how much I appreciate them. I don't ever want to do a program without you guys. You're an intelligent group, and I'm very fortunate to have you all aboard. And I will certainly want to realize that each time that we have a program that we are all contributing to, we're this whole nation is going to be beholden to folks like ourselves, because we're not going to give up or give in. We give out on occasion, but we are never going to give up. And I want to say good evening. Please tune in again next Thursday 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Dear President Obama, we, the people, have stated resolutely we reject your vision for our country. You claim you have not heard us. We, the people, have assembled across America resisting your efforts to subvert our Constitution and undermine our liberty. You claim you have not seen us. Since you have not acknowledged our message, let us here present it once more. For if, as President Wilson said, a leader's ear must ring with the voices of the people, the time has come.